everyone. Welcome to the X-Wing segment of the Wide World of Wargaming. Thank you for joining us. As always, I am joined by Drew Bishop.
Gold Squadron standing by.
And Jeff Wilder.
I'm on the leader.
And I am your host, Vincent Morgado. So, we did have quite a busy last couple days since our previous release. We have a, looks like a preemptive look into the new points update coming later this month. The Seattle System Open concluded today as of this recording. And we finally got a little more information on how the 2019 X-Wing World Championships will be going. We are going to cover that and many more coming up in the next couple weeks, but we're going to focus on those three tonight. First up, did anyone else watch anything of Seattle today?
I didn't watch anything, but I have, like, pretty much all of my close X-Wing friends went up there to participate. So I was standing by watching them and hearing their updates via Facebook, but I didn't actually see any of the games.
Militant Casual was very well represented up there, the way I understand it.
Yeah, they were. It's freaking awesome.
Including, Daniel Lim made the cut and was on stream, if I remember correctly.
Daniel Lim didn't make the cut.
He didn't make the cut.
He was on stream yesterday.
Yeah. He placed 19th overall. Right.
Oh.
Yeah, he was real close.
But, Fresno player Garrett Jost took scum of all things to number one in Swiss at 6-0.
Man, right, his list is so weird, too. I can't wait to talk about it.
Well, I watched his game against, I hope I pronounced the gentleman's name correct. Where are you? Winan Court? That was a beating unlike many I have seen in X-Wing before. Like, we were starting to get worried that Winan almost got tabled. Is how bad that was going. Apparently, Ketsu is pretty good, they say. We should also point out that Garrett actually had the highest MOV in addition to being the overall Swiss leader.
Yep.
Also, along with old Tarok and Cavill, if you're a BSG fan, brother Cavill. With dorsal turret and veteran turret gunner for that sweet. What is it? Hang on. Is that an 7? Is that an 8 die range 1 combo or is it 7?
7.
7, yeah.
Right. Okay. That's a pretty nasty combo, and I definitely did not enjoy seeing that one tap two rebel ships in one game. That wasn't fun. But as for the rest of the people rounding out the cut, we saw a pretty average spread. Plenty of the Cassian double B-wing wedge list. We counted 3 of them in the top cut, along with a handful of other rebel lists. One extremely strange one run by, what do we call Blair Bunky at this point? Like, he took 5 bandit squadrons, a blue squadron pilot, and a blue squadron escort and made the cut.
That's just Tuesday for Blair, man. That's just
I was gonna say.
But like, what is his nickname? As far like, does he have a nickname for being like the Z95 master?
I think he's just Scruffy the janitor, isn't he?
You'll have to tell me. You guys know more about this gentleman than I do.
He's on Scum and Villainy podcast. He's one of my favorite players and commentators. He and I have a lot in common, basically. He goes on rants, but his rants are usually pretty well supported. His Rebel Swarm play just speaks for itself. He paints his maneuvers like he's painting a masterpiece, man. It's always been incredibly impressive.
He's very Bob Ross like in that way. Like, he's very he's very silent, but when he speaks, like, everything he says actually, like, it really means something and has value. And when you hear him talk about matches, it's quite a magical experience. And watching him fly, like, I got to see him fight Jeremy last year in Fresno, and it was freaking awesome. He is a fantastic swarm player. But no, I don't have a name. I don't think anyone's really come up with a swarm name for him.
We have to figure out something for him at some point. Speaking of people known for playing a certain ship, I understand that Jonathan Gomes is somewhat well known for his Y-Wing play, and almost made the cut with a 5 gray squadron and blue squadron scout list. He was in the play-in rounds with that list and barely lost out to Quad Phantoms. And I mean by like eight points.
It's a lot of hit points.
So was that Patrick? Was Patrick running the Quad Phantoms?
Oh, I'm afraid I don't remember who his opponent was. I was really only focused on the not another Quad Phantom list.
You're all good. I know that Patrick got his invite to Worlds, but I don't remember what he was flying exactly.
Patrick who?
Hansen.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay, that name does sound familiar, but Patrick Hansen was running. It wouldn't have been Patrick Hansen because he was running Wedge, Jake, Luke, Braylon.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. No worries. Player, so. Yep. But we call him Natty Patty. The first time I ever met him, he just couldn't roll anything but hits. It was awesome.
Starting at 30th place and looking up, Daryl McMillan's a local player.
I was going to say, yep, Perry, Brandon.
Patrick Hansen. Daniel Lim.
Yeah. And everyone is here.
Ben Smith. He lives in Oregon now, but he was a local player. He's a militant casual.
Made the cut, but lost in the cut, but basically won every prize except for the invite. Super freaking awesome.
And Garrett is, you know, if you count Fresno as local, Garrett's in there as well. So California well represented.
Does anyone else find it hilarious that as soon as we say the meta is solved, somebody takes fourth place with triple red squadron expert and Jessica Pava?
I mean,
I heard Sherry laugh at that in the background.
Yeah, she was. I'll be honest with you, she wasn't laughing at that, but she may as well have been. Like
that timing is absurd. If she wasn't laughing,
I don't think it's that surprising. You're going in an event this big. You're going to have outliers, and these ships, the T-70s, are good ships, and the Red Squadrons have heroic, and come in, I think, at 49 each.
49 each?
And then you've got Jessica Pava, and as long as he's flying, he flew them, I watched one of his games, he flew them in an offset brick, and he flew really, really well, and it's, you're going to have... If you take ships a list that is decent to good, and you fly it well, you've got a chance. This isn't 1E. This is 2E. You've got a chance. You know.
Yeah. Pilot skill standing in for the puncher's chance, even if you're outlisted, one might say. Not as much Darth Vader in this cut as in previous incarnations either. I think I only counted one.
Yeah, I was going to say he didn't make a fair showing, and I do feel like if more people had brought Vader, and I guess that's kind of a stupid thing to say, right? More people bring Vader, then more Vaders will make the cut. But I do feel like Vader would have had a pretty fun time at this field, looking at the list of lists now, right? Like it looking at what like people brought.
23 Vaders were in the field, and with only one making cut, that's pretty impressive. I think
that's a terrible ratio.
I think honestly that says a lot more about just how freaking strong Rebel Beef is.
Rebel list of many different varieties did kind of dominate this cut. I think I'm going to try and count here. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 of the 16 were Rebel lists. Then a handful scattered throughout the rest. Republic finally makes a pretty good showing with, did I count three? Two out of the 16.
Are they both Anakin?
Yep.
Yeah, of course.
They are both Anakin. And they're actually both Anakin Mace.
Interesting.
Who I think is starting to replace Kenobi a little bit.
Or Ahsoka or Luminara, although Luminara was never really, not that she wasn't good, but like she wasn't seen all too often. And now she's not seen.
Is really interesting. I think she's going to come into a little bit more prominence with, and I've heard this combo from a lot of people, and it does scare the shit out of me. When Padme drops, Luminara is going to get mental.
Oh, yeah. Well, those mini swarm lists are going to be really good.
Well, the way people are explaining it, what you do is you reduce the usefulness of a focus token by half with Padme, and then you just Luminar the other damage. So yep. So every turn you can essentially remove up to two damage from somebody's attack.
Unless they're involved,
pretty terrifying. Did you clock number 22?
No, let me double check. Take a look here.
Oh dear God!
Wow.
Speaking of a man
after my own heart.
The utter mad lad.
So just for
man. Oh my! That is the most expensive Chernu.
Listening, who don't understand the inside joke. When I met Drew long, long ago, he was flying. When I met him, he was flying Whisper and a Whisper Mini Swarm. But he eventually moved to Rear Admiral Chernu and Whisper for a good long time. And Mr. Taylor Seidlitz finished number 22 with Whisper and Rear Admiral Chernu. With
out of 136, that's a solid showing.
It's actually pretty decent, too. I feel like Whisper with Afterburners is something that I haven't really thought about, but it's always kind of been in the back of my mind, and I wonder if, I mean, with Collision Detector and Afterburners...
That's what I was just thinking.
Dude, that is freaking... It's expensive on Whisper, but like... Whew! I want to find out.
The rest of your points all go to Chernu.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, that's... Can somebody put together... Hang on, I have to... Where's my phone? I want to find out how much this Chernu cost. In the meantime, we should talk about Ben Rampley bringing back the old Para special of Tarok Talonbane.
I was just about to say that. Like, it's weird how double Ketsu, and even though, you know, Ben made 23rd, like, the fact that, you know, oh, here we go. We're seeing Ketsu and old Tarok again, which is kind of interesting.
Garrett's Cavil is just a stronger choice there, and that played out. You know, I love
I think so too.
The Courage fighter. I really do. But the Cavil, that Cavil double tap is strong.
It's a beat stick, and it would only put it this way. Imagine if it procced off of Drea.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, there you go. Where is Minister Tua? God, no wonder this list ran absolutely wild. This is a brick.
Yeah, Minister Tua makes Chernu like very strong.
So the total count of this, guys, is 115 points. And it's 17.
Yeah.
It's 17 health.
So what does Minister Tua do for this list?
With a red one hard. How does a decimator have a red one hard? See what I mean? Okay, we're going back to this. No. Detour, why does a Decimator ever have a one hard turn?
I mean, we talked about
this, Jeff.
They didn't have one hards and one E. That's a little weird.
That's utterly ridiculous. I mean, he can't. Obviously, you can't action off of it. But dear God, you put Vader on it, so you're still modded.
Let's be very clear. This guy must have flown his butt off because, honestly, the Decimator in 2E. Is not a good ship. It's
an interesting list from a target priority standpoint. No matter how bad the decimator can be, you can't turn your back on Juke Fifth Brother Whisper.
If you've got a choice, Whisper's your target priority anyway.
Yep.
And the thing about it is, the big difference between this and 1E Rear Admiral Chernu, Drew, what is it? What's the big difference?
I'm sorry, the big difference between...
This Rear Admiral Chernu or 2E Rear Admiral Chernu and 1E.
Oh, there's only one difference, Jeff, and that's the boost.
And that is the boost in 1E was so absurdly powerful, and this doesn't have it.
I mean, it's still strong, but Chernu lost it.
Thank God.
With 2E.
Why you didn't run Dauntless?
What's that been?
Yeah, Dauntless is a really over the hull upgrade. Do you like the hull upgrade, Jeff?
No. I would adore Dauntless over the hull. Well, Jeff won't because he likes odd hull points.
That's what I was asking. If you lose 8 hit points off of that ship, you just bend down and kiss yourself where it feels really good because you've saved 57 points, yeah. 58 points of MLB.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah.
That's true.
I mean, you are moving Sheernos to five, right? You know, you are.
Yes, he is.
There's not a whole lot you can do if you get blocked, but you've got passive mods. You've got Vader. You've got Lone Wolf. I still don't know what Minister Tua does. I don't remember, but.
Minister Tua, at the start of the engagement phase, if you are damaged, you may perform a red reinforce.
To make Chernu's ability go
and off. Hotshot Gunner to strip the mods from somebody else. It's
smart. Yep. And then Whisper jukes you, normally, I would assume.
Yeah.
Ugh.
No, I'm just
really... it's low damage output, but it's probably very high effective.
I really
damage
like
output,
seeing that just because the Decimator just has not seen play, and rightly so for the most part. But I like seeing it perform well here.
Well, the cool thing about this list too is that Chernu with Darth Vader, you almost have the old Whisper back, because now Whisper can go against those I6s and Vader's ability on Chernu. You know, Chernu does what Chernu did in 1.0, which was protect Whisper from the higher initiative pilots. Albeit not as good or as well as he could previously, but I do feel like there's more to this list than it makes me want to try it. I'll just say that.
Well, it's interesting. What I find interesting about the list is that you put Lone Wolf on Sheeranu, but you essentially want to be within range 2 of Whisper just to make sure that you can proc Darth Vader.
Right.
So it's kind of, I mean, are you kind of using are you putting Lone Wolf on Sheeranu for the end game would be my question.
Well, the thing with Whisper Chernu, especially in 1.0, it was almost like, what is it, like the Jurassic Park Velociraptors, right? They come from two different sides, and then you're in the Bart Simpson conundrum, which is you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, right? Like, you can turn everything into one and then get destroyed by the other, and vice versa. So, you know, while I think Lone Wolf is a bit of a strange thing with Chernu, but I'll be honest with you, man, having Chernu's ability go off, like, I played against a double Decimator list a couple months ago, and it was Vader and Chernu, and I think it was actually Lone Wolf on Chernu as well. And it was just like every turn, it was like hit, crit, crit, hit, crit, 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 mm-hmm. crit, crit. Like, it was insane. And then with Vader, like, I don't think I've seen a single ship other than Handbrake Han pull that much damage out. Albeit, you know, Han is much more survivable, has the boost, and, you know, all that stuff, which is definitely not what Chernu has. But I definitely don't think that Chernu is something to not look at. Like, this is... Yeah.
Just to wrap this up, does it look like a lot of the fun got left behind in the just under the cut?
It does.
Looking at these lists?
It kind of does, yeah.
Like, you've got double... you've got the Duncan, or was it the Nathan Idy special in Vader Fell, double Scimitar got left behind. Ketsu Tarok Talonbane, Ketsu Sarissa Guri. Oh dear God, would I have loved to see that in the top cut. Handbrake Han Nora Jake got left behind.
We won't count that. We won't count that in the fun things that got left behind.
You won't, but I will. Jake Luke Wedge was in the play, almost in the play-in rounds. Probably don't see, not something we see very often.
He would have made it if he hadn't played Brilliant Evasion.
Of course Jeff says that. And then one more that's all the way down at the bottom, all the way down in 33rd, so I don't know if he had a chance at the cut. Resistance Chewie Nien Lulo.
Very nice.
I want to point this guy out just because I think he's the only person I've ever seen run Chewbacca out of Resistance.
Well, look at the Rose Tico and Finn combination. It is Chewbacca.
Super good.
Very good choice there.
Yep, I love it.
Off of Chewie? I have to look this up.
Well, not so much Chewie, but you can afford, because Chewie's ability is really good,
Yes.
But you can afford the combination because you're flying Chewie instead of trying to fly Lando or Han.
Yeah. And Lulo's going to pop at some point and proc Chewie's ability.
Han, since we're talking about resistance, Han or Rey.
Moving on from the Seattle System Open, which, as we've all agreed, was probably one very exciting event to attend. And congratulations to all of our friends from Littleton Casual for doing so well. Let's talk about the upcoming World Championships, which we just got the schedule release from. It is going to be taking place October 16th through the 19th in St. Paul, Minnesota. So bring snow gear, I think. I don't know. I don't think I've ever actually been to Minnesota.
Everyone keeps telling me that, and the three or four times that I went to Worlds, there was no snow.
Yeah, it made me super sad. A little early for snow, even in Minnesota.
I only say that I should know better because of how many people I mock on a daily basis for thinking San Francisco has the same summer weather as Malibu.
Hey, man. a true story. When I decided to move here back in 98 to finish law school, I visited here twice. Absolutely loved it. Knew that there were beaches. So when I moved here, I bought bathing suits.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Maybe wetsuits. But no, you do not go swimming with bathing suit.
You do not. No. For everyone who doesn't know, you don't swim in the San Francisco Bay, period.
Well, this would be the Pacific, but still.
Okay. Oh, that's right, because you live over in the peninsula.
Yeah, it's just too cold. It's too cold.
And it's full of mercury. And a few other choice substances floating around in the bay. But it is going to be... Worlds is going to be an extended tournament. They are offering on October 16th a single day last chance five or six round event, I assume, depending on how many people show up. If you make the top 64 at the last chance qualifier, then you get a shot on the 17th and 18th and the 19th, depending on it, if you make both cuts. So here we go, guys. We're starting to head into the – we only 3 months – four 3 months left? Four?
God, I'm getting married on October 20th. Oh. So, yeah, four months, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Are you getting married at the X-Wing World Championship?
Star Wars Destiny Day 2 World Championship.
Nice. Nice. All right. After you win, you're going to get married. That makes perfect sense to me.
No, please.
Oh, Jesus. So, guys, we don't normally do a lot of talking about extended unless we're talking about the system opens, as there are just a lot more material for the hyperspace events. Between what you would take, you give me your extended list and why it differs from hyperspace, Drew.
I'll be honest with you.
Oh, looking at that, extended.
I do dislike extended because of all the garbage in it right now. Like, I think D a couple weeks ago said that he was playing extended with his son. And he was just like, it's fucking insane. It's ridiculous.
I think he said that about Phantom specifically.
Yeah. And Handbrake Han too, like trying it is just like, it's absolute garbage. But other than that, I do feel like, as we were just talking about with the system open, like, you know, if just a few things changed, like everything could be pretty open and awesome. I'll be honest with you. I really want to put the Whisper Chair new list on the table and like and try it. And I think I'd try to get decent with that, but I do feel like I specifically absolutely would love to fly the Ace of Legends, Soon Tier Fell, with the Darth Vader and my girl Whisper. I feel like I'd have to run a triple list like that. But again, as long as Handbrake Han and the Quad Phantoms exist, like, I just feel like it's not, it, you know... along with like the whole Leia and the beef, I don't think it has a place. It's what I love to fly, but I just don't think at the moment it is that viable as far as going to a Worlds event. I would bring one to our top tier list.
Let's play the prediction game and let's put ourselves out there a little bit. Assuming that with the points update that we're going to discuss a little bit later, now that we possibly have a date for it, assuming Quad Phantoms is no longer a thing, assuming Rebel Beef in some way gets nerfed, like without the B-Wings. Assume they remove the B-Wings are no longer competitive again. And assuming that Scum gets brought back to kind of a reasonable level. What list do you think fall off? What lists do you think are going to move up? And do you expect any? Do you expect First Order or Resistance to, or you know, Republic or even Separatists to move up the hierarchy a little bit?
If you make the changes you're talking about, and you leave the Dreadlock alone, Dreadlocks are going to run rampant.
Oh wait,
you think so?
Dreadlocks is in Drea and the Lock Revenants. I was about to mention that too. I was going to scream it out in the middle of what Vince was saying, but yes, no, I do think so too. The Drea and the Lock Revenants is definitely top tier.
And the what's holding them and what's holding them in check is the Rebel beef as it exists right now. Quad Phantoms for sure. And I think if you're not careful, see, I think you need to be very judicious in how you take down Rebel beef. I think you really want that basic four ship Rebel archetype to be viable in any game of X-Wing. I really do, because it is a baseline and a sort of a counterweight to a lot of stuff going out of control.
The ability to have four semi-maneuverable three-die guns on any one target in a turn. Exactly. Is that really, you know, what the tradition or what the kind of the skeleton of a Rebel list should be around, do you think?
I mean, should's a loaded word, but that is what the most successful Rebel lists have been around. Yes.
I mean, that's kind of their thing, right? Like it's a mini swarm that's pretty beefy. And they all have decent abilities. Like, I don't think that that's overpowered in any way. But again, when I know I keep talking about the stuff that hasn't changed yet, hopefully. I think that at the moment it's too strong, but I do feel like that's what Rebels should be. Not like too strong, but I'm saying like the mini swarm with good abilities and decent hull, right? Like kind of like the Space Marines of X-Wing.
Oh, I'm not sure I like that.
No, like the vanilla.
Because I hate Space Marines. Like, one of the things that I love about playing Rebels is that nobody really has... I love playing no force Rebels. Because it's like playing the... It's like you're always the underdog. Instead of, you know, the Empire where every single ship has the ability to either take a force pilot or a force crew. I guess I could play Scum if I wanted to do that, since I think they really do. Does Scum have any force users?
Yeah, they've got what's your bucket?
They've got Ventress.
And Maul. They have Maul. I forgot. But I don't like the Space Marines comparison. Do something. Say something else.
But I mean, just a baseline. You know, the Rebels are honestly the faction that a beginner would probably feel most comfortable with. You know, you've got slow maneuvers, deliberate maneuvers. You've got shields to protect from crits. You've got a lot of named characters that you know. You've got the iconic ships. You've got. I mean, you've got so much. Rebels need to be, they need to be front and center in the game always. They just don't need to be as ridiculously fucking strong as they become. I've been watching a lot of Deadwood lately, so it's just even more than
usual. Oh, you're revving up, huh? we're now gonna stick a little Deadwood discussion onto the end of this episode. Well, hang on. Okay. Well, yeah, that's true. I definitely see where the argument's coming from. If you wanted to, I think that I like the way Rebels are built and the way they operate now, just in terms of the more times you see Rebel pilots' rules synergizing with each other specifically, it seems like the more successful the list becomes. And there's other lists that are. There's a lot of self-contained, like Imperial Aces is self-contained dominance, right? Everybody's really good at whatever they do. And I think Scum is kind of lost right now because they should be the Dirty Trick faction, and X-Wing just isn't in a place where Dirty Tricks win you games.
I think there is a difference, though. I think if you think about it conceptually, Imperials actually synergize at a higher level. Like, Rebels are direct synergy. Garvin Drace spends a focus token, he passes it to one of his buddies. Jake flies within and gives somebody a focus. Direct synergy. Imperials are more like Palpatine in a shuttle and Suntir. There's synergy there. It's just a really simple, high-level synergy. Let's protect Suntir from dying to an unlucky shot.
Right. So I guess maybe more what I meant to say was a mutual support with Rebels is their identity.
Right.
And I think probably that's, you know, that's made obvious by cards like Selfless and pilots like Garvin and pilots like, you know, Jake.
And that's kind of it's a range limited mutual support as well.
Right.
That's important to the identity.
But I mean, you know, is there an identity for, I'll just throw it out there, like Resistance?
I think the mini aces, like, you know, again, it's, you've got that three or four ships that are all I4 plus or 5 plus. And I think that, you know, again, if things change, they'll come back. But I know that we've been talking about.
Honestly, I think the big faction identity for Resistance is sheer efficiency of the ships. The A-Wing, yes, Lulo is the standout and too cheap, but the RZ2 A-Wing is just a really good ship.
Are you kidding me, Jeff? He's just as expensive as Oddball. Exactly. And Oddball is fucking garbage. So
we're working on it tonight. The floodgates have officially opened.
But the T-70 is a really good, efficient ship. And I think that's what Resistance, to the extent that Resistance has something going for it, that's, which I like that a lot. I like that, you know, we talked about the Red Squadrons with Jess in the Seattle System Open. I really like that just basic ship efficiency kind of list. It doesn't rise to the level of what Drew rightly complains about, which is efficiency to the point of brokenness. They're just really good, and they don't self-synergize, so there's nothing that breaks when you bring four T-70s. Bless you, whoever that was.
Well, it wasn't Drew, so...
Sherry says thank you.
One day we're getting Sherry on the show.
We will.
This is happening. And, you know, let's take a look at... I won't ask if Republic or Separatists have identities yet, because they're completely half-finished factions. Probably not even half. But what about First Order? Like, why are they lagging so far behind? Is it just not having an I-6? Like a real,
because all their ships have even hit points.
Okay, Jeff.
It's because their best boy got his best upgrade boosted from, what was it like? I don't even remember.
It was
12, I don't even remember what Supernatural. Yeah, Supernatural went from 12 to 36. Like,
well, on him it's only 24.
Yep, so from 12 to 24. So that extra 12 points. Is like literally another. I mean, I know it's not the First Order TIE fighter.
Not even half a TIE fighter.
Yeah, like still that point differential really, really hurts them. But again, I mean, as I always like to point out, dang man, they just need some more they just need some more ships. They gotta have some more stuff.
I know at this point it's sort of a joke, but I'm telling you, think about this very sincerely. If Kylo had 7 hit points, if the TIE SFs had 7 hit points, they would be, the First Order would be kicking ass.
I think a 7 hole TIE fighter is just so anathema to this game.
It's not anymore. I mean, it's a 7-point X-wing, a 7-hole hit point X-wing. They've got shields.
No, because X-Wings have always been the heavier ship.
Well, it's also got three evade dice, too, and a sensor slot. Like, sure. I mean, I'm all for giving Kylo and the silencer, like...
It's got two evade
He's talking about the silencer. You were talking about the SF.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to SF. I'm like, no, they don't have three evade dice.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like,
not that good.
Like giving... that's what I'm saying. Like, giving the silencer the efficiency of the T-70, I think the silencer would then get boosted to a point where we would be in a... And I'm kind of going out on a limb here. I think it would create an issue like we did have in 1.0 where, like, that scaling would be ridiculous, right? Because then people would start running... the naked silencers and maybe
I agree, and that's sort of my point. It's that even number of hit points is so daunting when one unlucky defense roll can take half points from you, and that's true on the silencer. It's true on the SFs.
Keep going.
And it's true on a couple other ships,
Jeff.
No, it is true on a lot of ships, but the thing about it is that a lot of ships aren't that expensive. It isn't. The Defender is an underappreciated chassis. It is not an accident, playtesting wise. I guarantee you it's not an accident that the Defender went up to 7 hit points.
Oh, no. I'm pretty sure the Defender is exactly what its stats are and exactly what its point costs are, because they know if it was 6 hull... it's the most unplayable, 70-something points in the game.
Exactly.
And if it's 7 hull, you can almost be, you can almost put upgrades on it and not feel like one roll is going to kill you.
So basically what I'm saying is if you saw the silencer and the SF go up with one shield and one hull respectively each, at a discounted, if you want to raise the cost, of course. But at a discounted cost where it's not going to cost you 8 points for that shield on the silencer or whatever it is, 5 points for that hull on the SF. You give it a discounted cost, the First Order would be in so much better shape. So much better.
You know, it's interesting that we talk about the price of the silencer. When you look at it, it's not really dissimilar from an E-Wing. The stats are identical. You just replace one hull with one shield. The dials are very similar.
How many does he?
The silencer is better.
Does he wing get played?
Be honest. No, it doesn't. And I think price is probably the same thing.
Isn't that what Michael? Isn't that what Michael took at the system open? Michael Malvison from SF.
I don't know, but. It hasn't done well regardless, and I think it's the same thing. 6 hit points is such an awkward position. Like, it's fine for Wedge and Rebel Beef, because if Wedge does his job and then dies, that's fine. And if Wedge does his job but they kill other stuff, then hallelujah.
Because you still have Wedge.
It's just that when you're only flying 3 ships and you lose half points of them to a lucky shot, it's backbreaking. It's not something that people want to risk at tournaments, basically.
I mean, that's true, but you could argue the same thing about Vader, who's not dissimilar in cost. I mean, he's actually 11 points cheaper than Kylo.
Yeah,
and the same thing can happen.
No,
but I think it absolutely can. True effective. I think it's the difference in just effectiveness overall. It's just that Vader does so much more than Kylo at such a lower cost.
Yes, including hitting like a truck.
He's the most reliable 3 damage in the game. I think we've established
this. Yes, 3, and it's 3 plus damage. He's the most reliable 3 plus damage because
3. Yeah,
with crit because it's 3 plus.
Or ATC.
So, I think that's what's going on. I don't know what they're going to do to fix First Order. It's really a tough line to walk because you've got the artists of range control and patience that are just waiting for First Order to come down to what is a reasonable price for a run of the mill good player. And when a run-of-the-mill good player can do okay with First Order, these artists with First Order are going to just kick ass with it. So it's a tough line for FFG to walk. I don't know what they're going to do.
So leading out of the what was going to be a discussion about Nationals, and we kind of just turned it into a general extended discussion, let's keep going on that track of what we're going to do for First Order and how they're going to be competitive, hopefully, after the point shuffle. Obviously, you know, one more ship isn't going to be enough, or two more ships probably won't even be enough coming out. I think they don't get – do they get anything in the next two waves?
They do not, but I'll be honest with you. Yeah. When it was right before Last Jedi dropped, they Toys R Us was giving out posters for the movie with the new AT-AT on it. And I remember it only because there wasn't anything like worth getting as far as like me and Sherry and everyone was concerned, because there wasn't anything new for X-Wing or anything like that. Not like Episode 7 when the new core set dropped. But there's a TIE bomber in one of the drawings with right above the super AT-AT walker. And I'm really surprised that we haven't seen that yet in X-Wing for the First Order.
Well, the movie's not out.
No.
We're probably not going to see anything for them until...
No, for The Last Jedi. It was the poster of them on Crate, and there were TIE bombers above the AT-ATs. And so I was really like, wow, we're going to get it. But, I mean, it's been almost 2 years and we haven't seen it yet, so.
Well, you guys have obviously been saying for a while, I think since the Episode 9 trailer, that the First Order has their own version of the Interceptor.
It looks like they did. And then, of course, in the new Resistance show, they also have another new TIE Interceptor, which looks freaking cool. The Lego set is awesome.
A lot of people are speculating that a couple of characters from that show are going to be making an appearance in X-Wing. I'll be honest, if they put that weird, you know, kind of, I don't even know what to call it, but that custom-built TIE fighter into X-Wing, it's going to look sweet on the table. But
it will.
We have been informed that the points update will be coming on June 26th. But it's FFG is teasing us by calling it a discussion about the summer squad points update.
Could you just imagine what that's going to be like? Like, oh yeah.
Oh, it's going to be really funny. So here's one thing that could happen. I hate to cut you off. One of the things that happens with just like 40K sometimes is that they'll drip literally a month of rules out with no points.
Oh my God.
Make you wait until the day of it releases and then drop the points on you.
I hope they don't do that. That sounds so like they'll just be saying like, oh yeah, like Handbrake Han isn't going to be a thing anymore. Well, yeah. It'll be nice to see what takes place after that. And then they don't actually tell you like what the changes are going to be. Right. Like,
yeah.
I would much prefer they do that than just give people the knowledge that their Quad Phantoms is not going to be flyable in its current form anymore. But don't give the points until they're actually ready to give the points. I would much prefer they do that than just today you can fly Quad Phantoms, tomorrow you cannot.
I have to say, Jeff, that's like the least thing I expected you to say.
the really? Least Jeff thing.
I'm deadly serious. Like,
I'm not sure why, but I'll tell you everything that I. Pretty much from the very beginning of X-Wing, I have always been on the side of the non-hyper-competitive player.
Okay.
Yep.
And pretty much everything that I, every opinion that I hold, every argument that I make.
Every move that you make.
Every breath you take.
Thank you. Oh, thank God, Jeff.
It's all from that perspective. And I think that this is consistent with that. So.
So let me counter argument this, and it's the obvious one. You know, how long do you want to drag people out with, oh, hey guys, guess what? In a week, it's coming. Oh, by the way, now you have to wait literally until the 4th week of July.
Oh my God.
Even after we're just going to make you jump up and down, literally like dance on the hot stove. Like this would be like the baseball trading season, only worse.
Well, the thing is that we're talking about two different things, though. There's a difference between we're going to make these ships much better, and we're going to make these list archetypes not flyable in their current form anymore. And I'm talking about the latter part. I think that it's a good idea to let people know the list that you're relying on right now that are broken is – I was saying ships, by the way.
I know you were, but
– I mean, it's the same thing, the right?
The lists you're relying on right now are broken, and you want to start weaning yourself off of them.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. Yep. You want to start exploring some of these toys over the next month.
Yes.
So that when it comes, you're not like – you don't have a bucket of cold water dumped on you.
I think there's a side benefit to that in that there's sort of a skill that people can have in figuring out, hey, what is likely to happen? As we were talking about earlier in the show, what is likely to emerge to be have their points lowered to become a better list? And that kind of anticipation is actually a good thing. So I think that's the good flip side of something that they'd be doing for the competitive players.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Lewis, I wouldn't mind not getting the points right then on the 25th, just because I may not be the world's most competitive player, but I at least like to know what I can and can't do. Like, X-Wing for me is a puzzle, and all these pieces fit together in a certain number of ways, and I need to know how big certain pieces are so that I know how I can construct my inevitable overall picture. And the longer I go without those, I kind of just, I freeze up. It's like the difference between free form poetry and having a rhyme scheme. You follow me on that?
Yeah. Yep. But again, I do want to be clear. I think that if they're having the discussion of the points changes, like a formal sit down podcast, YouTube, whatever, of the points changes, they should drop them. But it wouldn't bother me if leading up to that, from this point, they started saying, you know, don't get too comfortable playing Quad Phantoms. Don't get too comfortable playing Heimbreak Han. Don't get too comfortable. Oh, sure. You know, I'm not talking about the 25th or 26th specifically, and then they start teasing us. I'm talking about, I wouldn't mind if they started giving us heads up now in terms of just the archetypes that aren't going to be playable anymore.
Right.
Absolutely. Drew, jump in.
No, I'll be honest with you, that when I first heard that they were like going to discuss it, I laughed. I was like, how are they going to talk about it without releasing it? Right. And I mean
the same way they do their intro games.
I get
where they show everything, but they cut, like, it's just not the numbers.
Yep. And then of course they like play it wrong or have things that are incorrect and like stuff. When you add the list together, it's actually more than 200 points and whatever. But no,
wouldn't that be a tease?
Yeah, right. Like, they did that. playing with incorrect things, and then like
something that right now would be like 250 points.
The quick build lists aren't even legal lists.
Oh, you mean like the Chewbacca quick build, which is unkillable,
and Fenrau with afterburners?
Yeah, things that they're not even allowed to actually take. And I still think the quick build's pretty cool.
I've seen some pretty good quick build events. I just think some of them are so lopped, are just so wrong in terms of the quote unquote threat rating. Like, how is a how is an X-Wing the same threat level as an Upsilon shuttle? Right. Is my question.
That's.
But to be fair, they learned from, right? They learned that Supernatural Vader. Supernatural Vader at whatever threat level he was at. Was not the same threat level as the other things.
What if they bring Supernatural back down?
They might a little bit, but not anywhere close to just flat 12 or anything like that.
No. I mean, keep it at initiative, but I mean, don't have it be going up by 12 at every init step. You know what I mean?
I would not be surprised. I don't really expect it, because I think so many people are just happier that nobody at init 6 brings supernatural reflexes, but agreed. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes down to like 28 at init 6 and then, you know, works its way down from there. But I wouldn't expect anything lower than that.
Wouldn't it be fun though to see Supernatural Vader against Supernatural Anakin?
I guess it depends on
I don't know about that
definition of fun. Sure.
Fun to watch.
Yeah,
like fun to watch.
I mean, sure.
Like imagine the you're a poker player. Imagine the bluffs possible with when you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, really,
like double super daddy six trading each go bouncing off each other.
It's going to come down to who's first player.
Well, I don't know. Vader doesn't have a boost.
I mean, he does if he wants afterburners. If he takes afterburners,
right, but he can't boost off. He can't supernatural right. boost. And you know, Anakin yeah. can.
Yeah.
Of course, Anakin can't double action. The same way, but I mean, just like think about that. Would that be kind of like? How cool would that be? Just essentially ace battles. Every faction you pick your. You pick a six, and you just go one-on-one-on-one-on-one.
Yeah.
So first order, you have to sit this one out.
Yeah, what would you guys take?
Poe.
Would you? That's a solid choice.
I'd take Poe.
Yeah.
Are we talking naked or point?
BB. I take BB-8, Poe.
I would definitely take a naked Oscar Isaac. 110%.
God damn it, true.
Oh, poor Sherry.
Right. Oh, naked leaking fin? What?
I'm sure Sherry's very secure at this point.
I don't
know. I'm not even going to pretend to know. Moving on.
Well, let's go ahead and wrap the episode up on a naked Oscar Isaac.
I bet you'd like to wrap up a naked Oscar.
I'm glad we're back to this in our episodes. I think we did. It's been a while since we've gone that far into the.
I mean,
into the 18 plus.
In closing, permission to jump in an X-wing and blow something.
All right, guys, we're. On that note, we are officially wrapping this show. Drew and Jeff, thank you very much for joining me. We hope folks enjoy this. Thank you very much for sticking with us after last week, and we hope to see you again next week. Gentlemen, sign off.
Yeah, have a good week.
Take care.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.